beyond the sea, somewhere waiting for me. My lover stands on golden sands and watches the ships that go sailing.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Packers Podcast. My name is Michael Cohen, and I'm here, as always, with fellow beat reporter Bob McGinn. Our podcast is brought to you by Cannon and Dunphy, and we thank them for their support. It's Wednesday evening, 8:46 p.m., and we are downtown tonight, Bob.
We're at the penthouse.
Because
the Cohen penthouse.
Because of my wounded knee. I am I'm back from I don't know, IR designated to return, I guess.
Yeah.
And the knee surgery went well. We are hopefully looking at about a two-month recovery, and then I'll go back to my usual mannerisms of dunking from the free throw line and throwing 70-yard bombs, and we'll be good to go.
So, Mike, it was a cartilage repair?
It was a cleanup of three different things. I had a small tear in my meniscus. I had a piece of bone that had broken off or was about to break off, and it was going to float around there, so the doctor cleaned that one up. And then I had a large lump of scar tissue that was aggravating one of the old portholes from a previous arthroscopic surgery. So that was my Tuesday, and then I spent the next few days at the McGinn household under tremendous night and day 24-hour surveillance care. I had the full kitchen at my disposal. I had a couch. I had a bed. I had another couch downstairs. It was a good week of recovery there, Bob.
Yeah. We enjoyed having you. We had you for four nights, Mike?
Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday.
Yeah. Four nights. It was really fun.
That first night, I was out of it. I slept for like 13 hours when I got home. I was a mess after the surgery. Had a little I was just kind of nauseous after the anesthesia, so I ended up staying at the hospital few extra hours, but all is well.
I was kind of behind closed doors. I'd see at night when I was working, and then
you'd walk out into the kitchen, grab a glass of water, and grumble, and then you'd coffee. Go back into the office.
We watched the Gent game against the Eagles. You watched it.
Yep. And I also watched a UConn basketball game that I recorded. And it was a good week. I watched a couple movies. Finally got to see Straight Outta Compton, which I had been looking forward to seeing, a movie about a rap group, as I told you at the time. So it wasn't too bad. And now I'm more or less back to work, still kind of using crutches a little bit, but getting better.
Good.
Now, about this music, Bob.
Yeah.
We got a lot of compliments for my choice last week, Michael Jackson. I think we're going to get some compliments from the older crowd for this one, because you chose a little bit of a classic here.
Do we have any older listeners?
Oh, sure.
On podcasts?
Oh, okay. Sure.
All right. So we got Mr. Bobby Darin, 1960, Beyond the Sea. Now, I think there was a story on his life. Kevin Spacey played him, and Spacey sang that song very well in that movie about 15 years ago, I'm going to guess. Frank Sinatra loved Bobby Darin. He's a kind of a swinger in that 60s genre. It's a heck of a song, huh, Mike?
How did you come to choose that one?
I've just always liked that. And I saw somewhere I was watching something in which Kevin Spacey was on TV doing that song. And like Katie Couric or something just was introducing him on maybe a Today show or some kind of a show. And she loved the way Spacey was doing that song. And I said, I'm going to the original.
It's better than Deer Camp.
You think?
I think so. It's the second week of Deer Camp. That'll go down in the all-time podcast annals.
That's a low light?
Yeah.
Okay.
Even your wife said don't do it.
Yeah, she did. She warned me. She cautioned me.
Although I will say I didn't get any negative feedback about it.
Youper blood runs deep, Mike.
If you say so. Well, it's been a while since we've had one of these podcasts because, like I said, I was out for that week. And in between, the Packers defeated the Minnesota Vikings. Pretty thorough victory. It wasn't really that close in the second half there. I guess what really jumped out to you about it? What sort of stuck out when you went back and watched the tape and did your rating the Packers?
Well, watching the game, Clay Matthews stuck out. Mike, might as well talk about him first. I mean, he hadn't done anything since he got hit by ex-teammate Alan Barber in Philly, right? On that jet sweep when he was playing inside backer, right? One of the only times all year. So he's got this shoulder, damaged shoulder, and he hadn't done much. But in this game, I counted 7 big plays. A strip sack, 2 knockdowns. He got a holding penalty on TJ Clemmings. He screwed up a run by flattening down, and he had 2 batted balls. That's 7. In previous games, he had like 0 or 1.
He had a couple additional quarterback hits, I think, too, on plays that Bradford got the ball out.
I think I said that. Did
you?
Knockdowns.
Oh, knockdowns. Okay, yeah, okay. Yeah. He had one on that spin move that he put on Clemmings on the left side, spun inside, and drilled Bradford.
So I'm doing the All-NFC North team today with scouts. I interviewed one from each team today. And TJ Clemmings, believe me, is going to be last place at left tackle. So let's consider the caliber of opposition.
Spoiler alert.
Still.
People are waiting for this on Sunday. You can't just tease them like that, Bob.
That's my lips are sealed beyond that, okay? Right. But Matthews had some swagger back, Mike. He was sleeves roll. I mean, you know, no sleeves, arm looking good, hair hanging down, flying around, intimidating, swatting the ball around. It was impressive. And that's what you got to have to do something in the playoffs, Mike.
I think it was pretty obvious that the production was better than anything he's had in recent weeks, but what jumped out to me was just sort of the way he carried himself, and you touched on it a little bit by mentioning swagger. I just thought this was the first game where he rushed off the edge and it didn't look like he was thinking about his shoulder. There were other times where, you know, he might have a play or two where he looked unencumbered in previous games and he would just go, but then there were other times where, you know, he would get hit by a lineman, you know, or a lineman's punch, and you could see it didn't quite look right. And I just didn't notice that as much in this game. So if he can replicate that again against the Lions, and we'll talk more about who he might be facing when we get to the scouting report. But, I mean, that was huge, I think, just the fact that he looked really, really comfortable. And as you mentioned, not only were they 7 big plays, they were 7 big plays that directly influenced, you know, a lot of the ways that this offense was able to generate points.
On third downs and boarding drives, you know, the Vikings moved the ball almost at will, and had it not been for Matthews, this could have been a real shootout.
Yeah, he had that pass breakup on third down that killed a drive in the red zone. He had the strip sack, obviously. He had he had another sack, I think, that was on a third down later in the game. It was just, it was impressive. It was impressive.
All right, now let's go to Nick Perry, Mike. So Nick returned after a 3-game absence?
I think so.
Yeah. And Perry...
Maybe 2-game absence.
Maybe,
against Houston. He got hurt.
Okay. So, I mean, he wasn't anywhere near... Didn't have as near the... Is there such a word as impactful?
Yeah.
It's a terrible word.
I agree. One of the things that I was told in journalism school, or excuse me, at the student newspaper, the Daily Orange, was never use the word impact in a sports story. Impact means collision.
Hmm.
Influence is what you mean.
Yeah. Good. Interesting. Okay. So Perry didn't do much until the end. And in garbage sack, he had 1 sack against Clemmings and 1 against the right tackle, the obscure Jeremiah Searles or Searles?
Searles.
Searles. Okay.
Searles and Sherrills. Two names pretty similar there.
So, but Perry still, I mean, he closed, he finished. What's he got, 10 sacks?
Yeah, career high.
You know, Mike, he doesn't have that many pressures. Well, the pressures he does have, 10 are sacks. I mean, he's able to finish and close, so more power to him.
So, okay, you mentioned that both of his sacks came in garbage time. So when you went back and looked at the tape, what did he look like in the 3.5 quarters leading up to that?
Well, he only played 34 snaps. Kind of nondescript, I think. I really didn't see him being that effective against the run. Nobody was that effective against the run. The Vikings had their way there. And in the pass rush, there was nothing really happening until, you know, he was just kind of biding his time, breaking back in, and then he got the 2 blowbys. One of those was in 2.5 seconds. That's fast between snap to trap.
I made the point this morning on the radio that I thought, even if Perry is less than what he normally is, and even if he's not that effective, he didn't make any bad plays necessarily. Like, he wasn't getting killed for huge gains, or he wasn't, you know, getting called for penalties for, you know, swinging that club or anything. And so the reason I brought that up is because I think just having him makes a difference, because then you can move Peppers inside. You can move Daytona inside. You can give guys a different look instead of just Guyon and Daniels over and over again. And you can't necessarily, if you're the Vikings, dedicate a ton of attention to Matthews, because there are guys on the other side that are somewhat capable. Do you think that just having him influences an offense? Do you agree with that point?
I do. And remember the last couple games, like you said, they weren't able to use Peppers and Dayton with the hand down inside in that NASCAR, whatever you want to call it. I don't know. Yeah, Perry takes some pressure off everybody else. He's done enough to demand that.
Do you think that with that type of an injury, because it's a cast and it's not necessarily like the one Matthews has where he's gaining strength, do you think what Perry was against the Vikings is pretty much what he's going to be if the cast is the same size? I just don't know how much could change game to game, because it's not like the Matthews thing where every week he can get stronger muscular or muscle-wise, rather, because everything is covered by that club. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, I would think, in terms of using the club, that's not going to change. The ability to grab, that's not going to change. But he's going to get better cardiovascularly. How about that word?
Impactful cardiovascular.
I'm speaking awful, Mike. I apologize to our listeners. All right, what else do we want to talk about this Viking tilt?
Well, how about what the Vikings did through the air?
Yeah, they exploited him pretty good.
I mean, this was an offense that had struggled for a long time because, first of all, they don't have that many playmakers on the outside, and second of all, the offensive line is so inconsistent and so porous that, I mean, Bradford was just getting drilled left and right game after game, and what did he throw? I mean, I know some of it was garbage time, but what did he throw for 380? Is that what it was?
I think so. His season high. The Vikings had 441. That was a season high. I mean, now 150 probably are in garbage time.
Yep.
No question, you know. And Capers is just trying to get the game over, prolong it. It's garbage time. They won. So, I don't know. Let's talk about the secondary.
Okay.
So, it started out with Gunter and Rollins outside and Hyde at the nickel, and that's the way they were going to go. And then Gunter hurt his elbow after about 19 snaps, I think. And in comes Demaryius Randall to replace him. Randall had been on the bench. And the best of those four players was Micah Hyde.
I agree.
He had some nice breakups. He gave up a touchdown pass and in the slot. He should have played that better, but he had some breakups. He challenged receivers. He's had a couple good games now, and I would think against Detroit, Gunter practiced today, Wednesday, with the elbow, and I would think it's going to be the Randall on the bench and Rollins and Gunter outside and Hyde inside.
And McCarthy said that he fully expects Gunter to be able to play this weekend. So yeah. I agree. I think that's kind of the way they're going to go. I think that in addition to the struggles that Demaryius Randall has had recently, I think if you go back and look at that matchup from week three, he was beaten routinely, repeatedly, over, under, left, right by Marvin Jones. Marvin Jones Jr.
Yep.
Who had over 200 yards and two touchdowns, right? Yeah.
Yep.
And so I just think you put those two things together, and it would take an extremely confident and fairly bold coaching move by Joe Witt, Dom Capers, and McCarthy to put Randall out there ahead of one of those guys that you mentioned, whether it's Gunter, Rollins, or Micah Hyde.
So Rollins certainly has not covered himself in glory of late.
No.
He lacks awareness. He's not really that physical either, more physical than Randall, who's kind of standing around hoping other people finish off tackles / plays.
Yeah, that's the one thing that I've noticed, and that's another thing I mentioned on the radio this morning, is that, you know, if you watch the game and there's an opportunity for a tackle to be made and Randall's there and maybe one or two other teammates are there, he's fine letting everybody else come in and make the play. And it's strange because at the opportunities where he has to be physical, he just gets bowled over. You saw that touchdown catch, what was it, by Bellamy? Was that who it was?
Mm-hmm.
Against the Bears, where, you know, basically they said, okay, Demaryius, try and tackle our receiver, and he got flattened into the ground. So I don't know if he's conscientious when it comes to his injuries, if he's sort of cautious there, or if he just is not able to match the physicality at this level, but it's something that other teams are noticing and something that is showing up enough throughout game after game, week after week, that it's sort of becoming a trend that he doesn't want the physical aspect of the game, it seems.
Now, Mike McCarthy went out of his way after the game Sunday to discuss Randall's injuries. What do we got, a hamstring and a groin?
No, a groin and a shoulder.
That's right. Okay. And he said he was almost made inactive.
Because of the shoulder, not the groin.
Okay. All right, we don't know anything. I mean...
Yeah. He played against the Bears the week before.
Could be true. It could be noise. We don't know. So, all right. So, they're going to be fit. Well, we'll talk about the Lions later.
Well, what about the back end of the defense? You know, we've talked a lot about the safeties and how, with the corners struggling, the safeties have been fairly steady for them throughout the year. What happened on that touchdown to Thielen? I watched that on the All-22 today. I don't know what kind of angle Clinton Dix decided to take on that play. It was just, you wrote it in your rating the Packers. It's surprising to see a player of his caliber and his consistency make a decision like that.
Well, I don't think he is that consistent over the whole season. No, I don't.
Okay.
Do you think he was going for a pick, Mike? That's about the only explanation.
I don't know, because it wasn't as if he just mistimed it. It was that he was also 3 yards too shallow from where the ball came down. In other words, where he ended up meeting Thielen's path, mm-hmm. Thielen caught it like 3 or 4 yards beyond him. So it's not like he was at a place where he could have caught the ball. It would have been way too high. Maybe I wondered if he didn't see the throw. I wondered if he knew Thielen was the target but had no idea what type of throw Bradford made. In other words, maybe he thought it was back shoulder, or maybe he thought it was going to be a deep comeback or something. So he didn't expect Thielen to keep going down the sideline and have Bradford lead him. That was my impression. But, boy, I mean, he clattered into Rollins and Thielen scampered away for a 71-yard score.
Yeah. And when you listen to that Fox broadcast, why wouldn't either announcer have discussed Clinton Dix's role on that play?
I don't know.
That's...
I don't know.
With TV, Mike, you're getting half the story. And people should understand that. They're getting the positive swing out of it, and they're there to promote the sport, and it's just... It's like fantasy TV.
Well, everybody who had Adam Thielen was happy. Fantasy production.
Sure,
what did he finish with? 10 catches for... 12 catches for 202-something?
202. Whew. 15 targets. Wow.
So how many 200-yard receivers have the Packers given up this year? Jones? Thielen? Did Diggs get over 200?
No.
No? Okay.
80-some.
Maybe that's it. Maybe it's just two.
Yeah.
But they've had some big games against them this year.
Yep.
I don't remember that many huge performances against them last year, but I could be wrong. That was a long time ago.
All right, Chris Jackie did a great job on his kickoffs, and I mean great. 7 kickoffs to not have Mr. Patterson touch the ball on a 37-degree day.
Crosby.
When the ball's, yeah, what did I say?
Jackie.
Okay. Jeez, did I?
Yeah.
I talked about Ryan Longwell and Chris Jackie here. Man. Crosby was great. He had pop-ups. He hit him to the left corner. He hit him to the right. He hit one deep. Man, it was a textbook. It was clinical stuff.
I didn't know. That didn't register with me until you wrote that.
Mm.
And I just kind of, and as soon as you wrote it, I thought, yeah, Patterson really didn't touch the ball today, did he?
No.
It was impressive. And I think people, for somebody like me who grew up playing soccer, I can kind of, I've talked to Crosby about kickoffs and different styles and things.
Mm-hmm.
And even if I was to kick a soccer ball and try and put it exactly where I want it, and mm-hmm. the right depth, the right height, the right distance from the sideline, that's really, really hard. And so to do it 6 for 6 or whatever he was over the course of the game, that's an underappreciated part of the game that is much more difficult than it is probably for Crosby to kick a 40-yard field goal. I bet he would tell you it's harder for him to go 6 for 6 on that than it would be to go 6 for 6 on 40-yard field goals. Mm. Just a guess. Oh, I could be wrong.
Yeah.
But based on my experience playing soccer and trying to put balls where I want them, that is not easy to do.
I've heard a scout or two say, discussing kickers before the draft, that he could only kick off one way. Yeah. So Crosby can do it. He's got all these different kicks. He's got the high kick for distance, the high driving kick low to a corner. He's got the pop-up down about the 8, you know. It's impressive.
Now, who would make the call on that? Would that be McCarthy or Zook, do you think? Do you think Crosby has input?
Yes. And I think it's Zook primarily. You know, I don't think McCarthy is too much involved with that specific stuff on kickoff direction.
So what you're saying is Zook pitched a perfect game too.
He did very well. And I thought Jacob Shum did a good job against Mr. Sherrill's, a really good punt returner, one of the best in the league, has been for many years.
Yep.
Shum's had a fairly decent year.
Yeah, he's not bad. It's not bad.
You know, I've talked to all these scouts about all these players today, Mike, and it's kind of interesting, but that'll all be revealed on Sunday, okay?
Except for right tackle, which you spilled the beans on.
Left tackle.
Left tackle, I'm sorry.
Yep.
All these listeners now.
The Viking, now they all know, yep. All right, anything else about the Vike game, Mike? Should we move on?
I think we should move on.
All right, let's move on.
All right, now, let's talk about something that you had mentioned to me when I was at your house. You came in, you were in your office working on something, and I was on the couch being half drugged out on Vicodin. And you came in and said, you know anything about Bob Schnelker? And I said, yeah, I mean, his name came up in conversation with somebody I was talking to, a former player. But other than that, I don't really know much about him. And I'll let you take it away from there, Bob.
All right, so Bart Starr was entering his eighth year in 1982. And as offensive coordinator, he was in desperate straits, and he hired Bob Schnelker, who had coached several other places in the league. Schnelker was a great wide receiver, an end, as they called it then, for the New York Giants in the 60s. And then he coached for after retirement and in the 50s. And then he began his coaching career in Green Bay under Vince Lombardi. He was an assistant here from 68 to 71. And then he went on his coaching career. Well, then Bart Starr hired him. And it was no small coincidence that in 82, the strike year, when they only played nine games, Green Bay had an unbelievable offense. Lynn Dickey had one of his tremendous year. And the Packers made the playoff. Oh, well, they made the Super Bowl tournament, and they won a playoff game. But it was really a good year. The next year, man, the Packers scored 429 points. That may have been a club record, but I'm not sure about that. Dickey had probably his greatest year, 32 touchdowns. And Schnelker used James Lofton, John Jefferson, and tight end Paul Kaufman. Running back Gary Ellis, they all caught over 50 passes. I think that was a club record at the time. And Schnelker, Mike, he was a creative genius. He was a stubborn guy. Bart didn't tell him what to do. Nobody told Bob Schnelker what to do. He called his game. His players didn't tell him what to do. He was a deep drop kind of a guy. Dickey was taking 7 and 9 step drops. They were thrown downfield at the great James Lofton, like 24-yard digs, Mike. Those linemen, Greg Cook and Larry McCarron, and these people had to protect forever. And, boy, Schnelker was something else. Well, in 84, they drafted what they hoped to be Lynn Dickey's heir apparent, Rich Campbell, with the 7th pick in the draft in 84. I believe that's right, yeah. Well, Campbell had damaged his arm at Cal his senior year, and it never really recovered. And when they... I don't know what Schnelker thought about Campbell before that draft, but I remember Dick Corrick, the one who drafted him, Starr and the assistants actually drafted him, but the first minicamp went on that practice field when they saw Campbell start throwing the ball, they knew the mistake had been made. Well, anyway, Campbell was a nice guy, but he just wasn't very good. And Schnelker was probably the most... I can't remember another assistant coach who was more direct in his comments to the media, Mike, than Bob Schnelker. And immediately he just said what the truth was. There was no filter. And when he said Campbell's showing no arm strength, no accuracy, can't drive the ball, in order for him to play, he has to make major improvements here, here, there, and everywhere. Campbell never advanced beyond third string in 3 years or 4 years he was here, I can't remember. He never got even to backup, Mike. 6th pick in the draft. After Tony Mannrich, he probably is the all-time bust here. And he later blamed Schnelker to an extent for, you know, kind of making it impossible for him to really compete or to improve here in Green Bay. Schnelker didn't care. I mean, he was going to be honest till the bitter end. Well, under Forrest Gregg, Starr got fired, and Forrest Gregg very smartly retained Bob Schnelker. And he was here in 84 and 85. They scored 390 in 84. And they scored 337 in 85, again with Lynn Dickey. Well, after that year, Greg made his worst mistake. He fired Bob Schnelker and the great wide receiver coach, Lou Carpenter. Brought in Tom Coughlin. I can't remember who called the plays. Maybe Forrest did himself. Next year, they scored 254 points, went 4-12. Then in the strike year the next year, they scored 255. Greg escaped SMU before he got fired. The offense was in shambles. Well, Schnelker got the last laugh. He went over to the Vikings to be Jerry Burns' offensive coordinator, and they routinely beat the Packers in those years. Schnelker, after those games, I'd go talk to him, and he was he always had a few jabs for the Packers. You know, he never forgot it. I think he got an interview for a head coach once or twice, but he was just too outspoken. He was too acerbic in the minds of owners and general managers. He never got a head coaching job. He was in great shape, and I don't know how long he coached. I tried to reach him for that Super Bowl book to discuss Lombardi's years. I left him a ton of messages. He was living in Naples, Florida. He never got back to me. At that point, I guess he had just kind of checked out from the media. But he was an amazing guy. I've never quite met anybody like Bob Schnelker, and sent an email with James Lofton the other day, and Lofton hated to see him go. Bob Schnelker, boy, one of a kind.
His coaching career spanned 1963 to 1989.
Wow.
He was with the Rams, the Packers, the Chargers, the Dolphins, the Chiefs, the Lions, the Packers again, and the Vikings.
Okay. Yeah. How old was he when he passed?
He was 88.
88. Bob Schnelker. Yep. Never forget him.
Well, I think it's a good time for us to take a break for a word from our sponsor, and when we come back, we'll start to take a look at Sunday night's showdown between the Packers and Lions, which is, essentially, the NFC North Championship game. We'll talk about that next.
At Cannon and Dunphy, we're proud of our winning reputation. We're also proud to be the exclusive sponsor of the excellent Journal Sentinel coverage of our great football team. I'm Bill Cannon. To learn more about our winning team, go to our website.
So, as most everybody knows, the Lions have not won a division title since 1993. They won the NFC Central Division. So this is a 23-year drought, okay? When they won that title in 1993, it was the last game of the season. It also was for the NFC Central title at the Silverdome in Pontiac, Michigan, in the final game. And the Lions won that game 30-20. And at that time, okay, they had just won that was in 93. They had won in 91 and 89. I mean, they had Barry Sanders. But in this particular game, they did not have Barry Sanders. They didn't have the backup either, Derek Moore. They had Eric Lynch, a free agent from Grand Valley State. And Eric had 30 carries for 115 yards and two touchdowns. The story of this game was Brett Favre, the fourth-year quarterback, third in Green Bay. He had four picks. He had four picks for the first time in his career. Did you see the picture of Brett? Brett was feeling it. He had reason to hang his head, says our headline. This game, it was pretty interesting. Leroy Butler, the safety, said, it looked like we didn't even know what was at stake. It was like, oh, yeah, we're in the playoffs. It don't make no difference. The Packers had clinched a playoff berth the previous week, okay? The Packers now had not won the division in 21 years. 1972. Yep. John Brocking and Dan Devine, that team. Scott Hunter. So they had a 21-year drought. The Lions currently have 23. Eric Kramer, a third stringer for the Lions, beat the Packers that day. Anyway, Mike, Ron Wolf afterwards, he said, we have the loser's lament now. That's the only thing we have to look forward to. The Lions are a pretty good football team. So then 6 days later, the teams met back at the Silverdome in the first round of the playoffs. And in that one, Favre was magnificent. He hit Sterling Sharp with a 40-yard touchdown basically in the last seconds. And they defeated the Lions. Barry Sanders played in that one. Green Bay then would not win the division title until 95. That 23-year drought ended when, in the final game of the year at Lambeau, when Yancey Thigpen dropped the touchdown pass in the corner of the end zone, and the Packers beat the Steelers 24-19. Christmas Eve, light snow was falling. That's a game never to be forgotten. So you got a 23-year drought for the Packers, and now a current 23-year drought for the Detroit Lions. This is a big one for the Lions, Mike. Ford Field, I believe, opened in 02, maybe 01. You could argue this is the biggest game ever held at Ford Field. I think you could say that. You got a team that's got a first-year general manager in Bob Quinn, and they have a lot of weapons, and they were beaten 34-27 by the Packers in Game 3. And they're a 3.5-point underdog at home. The Packers are favored by 3.5. So should we talk about, you have any general thoughts on the matchup first, Mike?
Well, I don't think I'm going to be there, unfortunately.
Yike.
Because of this knee issue, I can't fly for a certain amount of time in order to avoid blood clots, which you're at a higher risk for, apparently, after surgery, as I read and was instructed by Dr. McKenzie. So I don't think I'm going to be there for the second straight week. I wasn't at the Vikings game either. So I'll be watching on television, and one of the things that I'm interested to see is something that I talked to Tom Silverstein about while we were walking back from practice today, which is how many Packer fans are going to be there? And the reason I ask is not just because I'm curious about how many Packer fans are in Detroit or how many are going to make the trip, et cetera. I'm just curious how many Lions fans sold their tickets early in the season just because they never expect their team to be that good. Mm-hmm. And now all of a sudden they're good and they don't have tickets for week 17. I'm just interested to know that.
I wonder. It's not a very far trip, obviously, from the state. I just don't know. 5,000-6,000 maybe, something like that?
I don't know. I guess it all depends on how much faith the Lions fans had in their team back in August and September and October. So it'll be interesting to see. In terms of the rest of the matchup, this is a question I guess maybe you'd be better to answer than me, but when you talk to these players about streaks or things that are really, really that date pretty far back into the past, 23 years for the Lions, not tying the all-time series with the Bears since 1933. When those types of things come up, we know what the players say, like, oh, yeah, it would mean a lot to us, etc. Do you get the sense that those things really even matter? Because I'm trying to put myself in their shoes, and I find it hard to believe that those types of things would register with me if I was in that situation. 23 years without the Lions winning the division? Okay, well, what if I'm a wide receiver that's only been there 4 years? That doesn't mean anything to me, literally nothing. And so I don't know, maybe I'm just being cynical, but I just wonder if those things are as big of motivators as perhaps the media or, people on social media make them out to be.
I think you're right, Mike. I don't think anybody, almost very few players in those locker rooms have any interest in that kind of stuff. I mean, number one, they're worried about their bodies this late in the year. They're all banged up, right? Number two, they're worried about their money and, squeezing out another year and, becoming financially set for perhaps the rest of their lives if they handle their money well, which some players certainly don't. That stuff means a lot to me. I mean, I've born and raised around this area, and I can remember Gary D'Amato did this great story on the 66 title game today, and I remember watching that on TV at home, and I remember all of those moments in that game.
Yeah, me too.
And, these games that we were just talking about here in 93 and 95. Now, I covered those games. A lot of people remember them. But, I can just remember these games like yesterday. And Lion-Packer games, that was my first game I ever saw. I believe it was in 59 at Lambeau Field. Those two teams played.
Yeah, me too.
But to the players of modern, I think the Packers try to do a good job. They have pictures of these old teams and players and moments. And I think there's a little bit of attachment to some romanticized interest in some players, yep, but
and
not much.
Certain guys have an interest in history of the league and the sport more than others anyway, mm-hmm. So, but I just, I don't know. I don't buy it as a true motivational factor for the whole team. In other words, if McCarthy stood up there and said, we have a chance to tie the all-time series for the first time since 1933 with the Chicago Bears, I just find it hard to believe that resonates with a lot of people.
I mean, let's face it. I think fans don't understand this, but they're, in some ways, the fans are more into these moments than the players are. So, I mean,
agreed.
It's just the way it is, and their attachment and their love of this team and whatever team it is in the whole league, there's 32 of them, and there's fans all over the place that are exactly the same. Players don't share that.
All right, so enough about the past, enough of a trip down memory lane. Let's talk about the 2016 Lions and what's changed since week three.
Yeah, let's do that, Mike, some changes. Okay, the offensive line, the center, Travis Swanson, he missed the last three games with a concussion. But today, Mike, he practiced on a limited basis, so he's out of the protocol, and he might play if he can knock the, I hate this expression, but I'll use it, the proverbial rust off, right? If he can regain his timing. Is that
I thought you were going to say cobwebs.
Yeah. Okay, so let's say Swanson's back at center. Then they got a decision to make at left guard, whether to move Graham Glasgow, who had beaten out Lake and Tomlinson here at mid-year at left guard. Then when Swanson went down, Glasgow moved to center. Glasgow's the rookie third-round pick. Who to start? I think Glasgow's probably better than Tomlinson, but yet he hasn't played guard in about a month. So their line's pretty decent. I guess I'm really on this right now because I've talked to all these scouts about all these players for all these the four division teams. It's a pretty good line. I mean, Warford's a good guard. The tackles are fine. It's not anywhere near as good as Green Bay's old line, but it's solid.
They've invested some picks in this line. They've got, what, three first-rounders or four?
I see two, Decker and Reef. Warford's a three. Glasgow's a three. Tomlinson's a one.
Yeah, Tomlinson. Okay, I knew there was one other one. They mentioned it during the broadcast on Monday night.
Okay, and he's kind of a bust. All right, the weapons, they're the same as before. You got Tate. You got Marvin Jones. Anquan Boldin, Eric Ebron, they all played against Green Bay. They're all back. There's a change at running back, certainly. Theo Riddick, a tremendous quick-footed, quick-twitch receiving running back. He's had a wrist injury, and he's missed three games, and he did not practice today. So the indications are that he won't play. And I think that's he's a real playmaker, Mike, as you know. And he can beat... He can beat a Joe Thomas in the flat. He could beat a Clinton Dix in the flat. That guy's slippery and dangerous. So
I think that's a big loss if he doesn't play.
He's out. So, you know, they tried with, the starting running back, Abdullah, has been out since week two or something. All right, they tried with Dwayne Washington, the rookie from seventh-round pick from Washington, and he's okay. But against Dallas, they tried with Zach Zenner, and bingo, the guy was 12 for 67 and looked good. He really did.
He's a there's not too much to disguise about the way he runs the ball. He's going to take the ball, he's going to run through the hole, and he's going to run through contact. I asked Joe Thomas, I said, how different is it if he plays or Riddick plays? And he said, well, Riddick's a matchup guy. You know, they're going to want to get him out in space and things like that. And that's the answer I expected. And then I said, what about Zenner? And he goes, well, that's a downhill runner, and that's about it. Yeah. So he's going to run straight downhill. He's going to hit him hard, and he can catch a little bit out of the backfield, but nowhere near what Riddick would provide.
He runs 4.54. I think he had 35 on the Wunderlich. He's from suburban...
South Dakota State, right? Yep. South Dakota State, yeah.
He's from the Twin Cities, Eagan, Minnesota.
Okay.
He's not a bad player. So, but without Riddick, they're limited. So it's all those the three tight ends... Three wides and one tight end for Matthew Stafford. Stafford, as you know, has got this splint on his finger. He hurt it 2.5 weeks ago against the Bears, hit by Leonard Floyd. He's not throwing as well. He's not. The ball's not as accurate. There's more wobble to it. Scouts have said this. So that's a problem.
His receivers say otherwise, but I think they're just being nice.
Yeah. So that's pretty much the offense. Not a whole lot of change from the group that Packers saw 3 months ago.
No, and if I remember correctly, that was the game where the Packers jumped out to a really big lead early in the game, and in the second half, Detroit came back like gangbusters and then ultimately fell short. So while this offense is certainly dangerous. There was at least one half where the Packers held them more or less. You got the box score here, right?
31-10 at halftime, Mike.
31-10 at halftime, and then the Lions scored 17 in the second half. So they got going a little bit more. But yeah, I mean, and that was kind of, you know, to a lesser extent, what any of you saw on Monday night if you watched the Lions and the Cowboys. The Lions were just going gangbusters out of the gates there early. You know, it looked like it was going to be a shootout, and then the offense sort of stalled a little bit in the second half. So maybe it's going to be a matter of whether they can put together a full game, you know, against this Packers defense after only doing half of that, essentially, earlier in the year.
It's going to be really loud. But Detroit crowds have a habit of turning on their teams. They're very passionate, but they do turn on their teams quick, and Mike McCarthy knows that. It's worked in the Packers' favor many times in the past, and that's what they'll be trying to do.
You would never turn on Michigan, Bob. You would never turn on them.
Yes, I would, Mike. Okay, let's go to the defense. Terrell Austin does a great job with that unit. They really don't have that much personnel. They are getting the max out of what they got. All right, Ziggy Ansah, perhaps their best pass rusher. He did not play against Packers because of a high ankle sprain. He missed about three or four games. Now he's back. He's only got two sacks. He is their best rusher. I don't think he's playing quite as well as I've seen him in the past, but he'll spend most of his time against David Bakhtiari. He'll have the advantage of getting off on the ball. Bakhtiari will have trouble hearing. So that's a matchup to watch.
And one of the things that's interesting is, and we've talked about this a number of times, in terms of those premier pass rusher against premier left tackle, Bakhtiari's held his own week after week, it seems like, this season. He has not been bad at all. He's actually, you could argue, played pretty darn well. And, you know, that last week against Everson Griffin was just another example of it.
I think he's played great, Mike. I really do. Yep.
I agree.
So he's got another tough one here, Ansah. I remember maybe Bakhtiari's rookie year over at Ford Field when he had a really bad game. Ansah walked him back for a bull rush sack. I remember interviewing Bakhtiari. I think that was his rookie year. He's way beyond that. Now he bows up, he anchors up, and I don't see Ansah beating him with bull rush. Okay, where else in the front? You know, A'shaun Robinson, the guy from Alabama, a second-round pick, he's playing a lot better right now. He's now a starter next to Haloti Ngata. Ngata's a guy, you know, the old Raven. He's not what he used to be, but, boy, every now and then he can crank it up. He's kind of like Julius Peppers, you know, four or five plays a game. He can make a difference. Devin Taylor, that really long end, 6'7". He's got 36-inch arms, Mike, and he plays with some strength. I don't like him that much, but, boy, some scouts really do. They lost Stephon Charles. I thought he played out of his mind, nasty and hard, late against the Cowboys. Wrecked his knee, went on IR. That's a bit of a blow, but that means Kyrie Thornton, the ex-Packer, will be active. They kept five DTs. Thornton's been inactive of late, but he's turned his career around, and he is a threat. They have to be careful about him.
I'll tell you who I like. It's the guy I think you're going to mention next. I think Kerry Hyder plays pretty darn well. He doesn't look like he's got a lot of physical tools. It doesn't look like he's got a lot of size, but he's just one of those guys that gives it a bazillion percent on every snap, and he finds a way to make something happen.
Eight sacks, Mike. He went from 300 to 270 this year.
Yeah, me too.
To move from inside to outside, and he's just kind of a football player. You're right, he's really good. So he'll play inside some on passing downs. All right, Anthony Zettel plays a little bit too, this guy from Penn State, a rookie defensive end, try hard. All right, the linebackers. Tahir Whitehead, the middle guy who plays every down, he's having his best year. I mean, a year ago in the first couple months, he was in the doghouse. I'm not really sure why, but he has really come on. And, I mean, the scouts see him as almost the equal of Eric Kendricks from Minnesota. He's really a good player. They're hurting otherwise. Josh Bynes is a guy who wasn't even on the I don't think he was on the team in the first Packer game. He was there last year, but they signed him. And they got rid of Kyle Van Noy, which was a good move. And Bynes, he's not great in any way, shape, or form, but he is a tough guy, and so he's on the strong side. And then on the weak side, you got DeAndre Levy. Levy.
I think.
Yeah, I never, okay.
I always mess that one up.
Milwaukee Vincent product. University of Wisconsin product. You know, he was a great player in 2013 and 14. He was good before that, but then he became a great one. Then he wrecked his hip the first game last year, sat out the entire year, came back, played this year in the opener, hurt his thigh, and sat out 11 games, Mike. So he's been back for three games. The second I saw DeAndre, and that was maybe on opening day, I don't know, I thought, wow, he's lost a lot of weight. He's listed at 234. And then I watched him in this Dallas game. I had the same feeling all over again. I asked two scouts about that. One guy said, both of them said they had the exact, they agree. One guy thought he might have been 218 or 220. I don't know. I'm not really sure, but both scouts said that he's not anywhere near what he was. Now, for his sake, I hope he comes around and has a good year next year. He's a great guy. He's done a lot for people in Milwaukee. But, you know, the Packers are trying to win a game, and if they can exploit him, they will. All right, that's the linebackers. Now the secondary. So really the story of the week, I think, and the story of this game is going to be whether Darius Slay can play. He's probably the best corner. Well, he and Xavier Rhodes are the best corners in this division. And, Mike, let's go to the injury report, okay? He missed two games in midseason with a hamstring. He aggravated the hamstring December 18 against the Giants 10 days ago. He sat out most of the Giant game. He sat out the Dallas game and was listed as doubtful last week. All right, now today the injury report comes out. He's limited.
It's his first day back at practice.
And what else did you see or read?
That he was in the locker room in a really, really good mood, sort of dancing, singing around, talking about how he's excited for Sunday because Sunday also happens to be his birthday. He's born on New Year's Day. So there was some speculation by the Detroit writers that perhaps with him being in such a good mood, perhaps with him practicing for the first time since the injury, and perhaps with his birthday being on Sunday, that he would try and give it a go. And if he can, you're the one that talked to the scouts. I think it'd be a tremendous boost for them if he can play.
I mean, several guys today said how much this has affected the Lions. They already lost their nickelback, Quandre Diggs, with a pec injury in week 10 or 11 or 12, I think it was, game 12, 11 or 12. So they're already down. They'd be down two of their top three. Who do you think means more to the Lions, Slay or Riddick?
Boy. Slay, I say, because, I mean, there's still games. Even the game when Riddick played here in week three, they tried to have him run the ball over and over and over again, and he just got blasted. Because that's not his strength. His strength is catching out of the backfield. And so later in that game when they made their comeback, that was still Stafford just throwing the ball a bazillion times anyway. So I think that they're more likely to survive with Stafford throwing the ball a bazillion times and no Riddick than they are with no Darius Slay. Because, I mean, you saw that tape of the Dallas game. Their backup, Johnson Batamosi, was just, I mean, it was not fair. I mean, he was playing as hard as he could, and it just wasn't even close.
I would just like to nod to my agreement with you. Slay over Riddick, it's a no-brainer, Mike. Yep. Okay, is Slay going to hold up? I mean, like one scout said yesterday, he said, you know, if I'm an old coordinator, I'm going to run a bunch of takeoff routes at this guy and takeoffs and see if he can hold up. And if that hamstring goes, boy, you're down one corner. That's a problem against Aaron Rodgers when you got a short bench. Now, Bob Quinn, the GM, he made an interesting move today, Mike. He took that nose tackle, Stephon Charles, he put him on IR, and he signed Cresden Butler. Now, Butler was cut by the Lions in training camp. You know, he's looking for a guy to play this week, and what are you going to do? So he went back to Butler, who has not been in the league's played football since the end of August, I don't think. And Butler played for the Lions when they defeated the Packers last November at Lambeau Field. So Butler made one or two key pass breakups at the end of that game at Lambeau. I think Detroit won that 18-16. I remember writing about him. I haven't gone back and looked at that story. So Bob Quinn's looking for immediate help. I think it's kind of an interesting signing. The guy can go out. He knows their system. I mean, who knows what kind of shape he's in or anything. He's been with eight teams, Mike?
In eight teams since 2010.
Cresden Butler has size. Trust me, there's a ton of teams looking for a corner. If anybody thought he was any good, they would have signed him by now. But he means more to the Lions than anybody else. Okay, what do they got? If they can, if Slay starts, then they got Slay and the little feisty Nevin Lawson, who's kind of like a three or a four. He started here for the last year and a half. He's feisty. All right.
He held James Jones without a catch last year.
Did he? Yeah. Okay. So then Johnson Batamosi, this career special teams guy for the Browns, who Bob Quinn signed in March, he would get out of the starting lineup. I don't think he'd be in the field. I think they'd still stay with Asa Jackson as their nickel. He's a guy, he's been with a bunch of teams. Caldwell knows him from his days in Baltimore, and so does Terrell Austin, the D coordinator. Jackson might be in the slot. At least Batamosi could come off the bench. He is a tough guy, and he does have speed. Alex Carter's a guy, a high draft pick, who they has never done anything. They promoted him from the practice squad last week. Who knows? Butler could be ahead of all those guys. He could be the third or fourth corner. Wouldn't surprise me. They're desperate. They're trying to win a game, you know. All right, so that's the corners. And then the safeties, you got Tavon Wilson, who did not play much in that first game. So he's starting ahead of Raphael Bush, and you have Glover Quinn, the glue of the thing. That's it.
Just like Clinton Dix, Glover Quinn's played 100% of snaps this season.
Has he?
Yep.
Okay. The Lions have...
How about special teams?
Well, they have a really good returner. Andre Roberts, one of the top three or four dual return guys in the game. Matt Prater, excellent kicker. He's won a couple games this year. And the punter's excellent, too, Sam Martin, especially indoors. He also kicks off. Veteran coach Joe Marciano, first year over there. They're a 3.5-point dog, Mike.
What do you think Prater's distance is indoors? Think he can get
58?
This? 58. Okay, I was going to say 59 or 60.
What do you think Crosby is? Same.
Maybe. Crosby's got a really strong leg.
He does.
I was going to say 60 or 61 for Crosby, but Prater is deadly accurate. He really is.
Do you see it as a blowout, Mike, for Green Bay?
No. No, I don't think so. I think it could be a pretty high-scoring game because I don't think either team has a very good secondary right now. I think this could be a game in the 30s, you know. Maybe I'm wrong, but I think there's going to be points. I think Rodgers is going to move the ball, certainly. And I think Stafford can, too. I don't know. I don't know. I think the Packers are going to win. I do.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think it's going to be easy. And remember, the last time that they went into that building, they were getting their butts kicked 17-0 in the first quarter and needed that dramatic comeback in the second half and a Hail Mary to Richard Rodgers just to win a game against a team that was pretty bad last year.
Wait, it was 17-0 early?
I just looked it up. Calvin Johnson had, I think, 2 touchdowns in the first quarter. He had at least one for sure. 17-0 in the first quarter. Now I want to look it up. Let me see.
I can't remember anything about that except Richard Rodgers, the play.
Yeah, let me see. Let me see. Now I'm interested.
Hmm. That was on Thanksgiving?
No, that was like the first week of December, I think.
Okay.
Let's see. That was the day that they promoted John Crockett from the practice squad and cut Alonzo Harris at like 3 o'clock in the afternoon for missing curfew with Eddie Lacy.
Okay.
All right, let's see. Sorry about that. It took me a second to get the box score. Here we go. It was 27-23. It was December 3rd. And all right, sorry. Yeah, 17-0 in the first quarter. And let's see who scored. So it was a 51-yard field goal by Prater to open the scoring, then a touchdown pass to Eric Ebron, another touchdown pass to Calvin Johnson, and another field goal by Prater. And it was 20-0 early in the second quarter, 20-14 at halftime. And then pretty much everybody knows how it ended from there. I don't think that this game could possibly top the excitement of that ending and just the unpredictability of it all and the controversy surrounding it with that phantom face mask call on Rodgers that kept the drive alive. And so if it's almost as good as that game, it'll be an entertaining one on Sunday.
So, Mike, let's look at this playoff picture. If the Redskins lose at the noon game, then what does that tell these two teams?
If the Redskins lose at the noon game, I don't know. See, I'm bad at all this.
Yeah, I am too.
I'm bad at all this scenario stuff. Our colleague Ryan Wood, he knows all the tiebreakers, all that stuff. And I'm not a numbers guy. I'm not a...
Then maybe they both get in.
Maybe.
I think so.
Boy, that could be really anticlimactic.
They're just
it?
Fighting for the division then.
Yeah. Well, okay. So they still have something to play for, a right. Home playoff game.
23-year drought, Mike.
If Washington wins, then it gets real interesting.
Right.
Because the loser of the Packers-Lions game would be out of the playoffs right. altogether.
Right.
So it'll be interesting.
We don't want to get in all that tie stuff. Let's just forget the ties. All right.
No. All right. So we're done talking about that game. Let's move on to some questions. It's getting late here. And I'm an old man, so I need to go to bed soon. We're going to keep this short. One question for each of us. Bob, this question comes from Nuclear Badger, a frequent contributor here. Should we have any expectations for Mackinton Dorlant? That's a cornerback promoted from the or brought back from injured reserve, rather, earlier this year. Or is he just a special teams player? Well, you wrote about him when the Packers signed all their undrafted guys back in, what would it be, May? Yeah. What's the deal with Dorlant?
You know, he runs the same as Hawkins, 4.39. He played at Northern Iowa, not a real big school. He's thin, about 182 or so, something like that. He's shorter, 5'10 and a half, maybe, something like that. He's feisty. He's a good guy. He's got a bubbly personality, and he plays like it too. You know, he's around the ball. He's got kind of a nose and a knack for this stuff. He's only played like 5 snaps in these last 2 games. I kind of like the guy. And if push comes to shove, if he had to be out there, is he better than Cresden Butler? He's faster than Cresden Butler. He doesn't have all his experience, but I don't know. He might acquit himself fairly decently.
Yeah, I agree. The feistiness is what's intriguing to me. And he was a guy, if I remember correctly, who benefited a little bit from having a teammate, another corner that was drafted out of Northern Iowa, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that would have opened him up to scouts and things like that who came in looking at his teammate.
Hall, who was drafted
That's
by
right.
the Bears.
Yeah, yep. yeah. Okay. And then the question I'll answer comes from Dan Hollett. And Dan wants to know, well, it's a pretty simple one. Is the secondary good enough to win in the playoffs? I'm going to say yes and no. It's good enough to beat a couple teams, I think, but I don't think it's good enough to win the Super Bowl. I just think that there's too much inconsistency with Randall and Rollins and too many times where they've given up big plays for touchdowns or been beat repeatedly by one receiver for big gains, you know, throughout the course of a game. And I could be wrong. Maybe they tighten things up and they get it together, but I don't think this is a championship caliber secondary right now. So we'll have to see how that turns out. But in the meantime, what do we got, Bob, on the way out there?
We got Bobby Darren, 1960, huh, Mike?
62.
Beyond 60. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Beyond the Sea.
All right. See you guys next week.
Thank you.
We'll kiss just as before. Happy we'll be beyond the sea, and never again I'll